Welcome to Generations with Kevin Swanson. It's about the survival of faith, family, and freedom. It's about the future. He's a father of five, and he's committed to preserving a legacy for the next generation. Here's Kevin Swanson.
Folks, this is Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director of Christian Home Educators. I'm a pastor. And the reason I'm here, I have five children, and so does Dave. Dave is in studio with us. And we look at the world through the eyes of a biblical worldview on this program. And Dave, you probably heard of Dan Brown's book, Da Vinci Code. It sold 46 million copies. I think it's beat out my book, Upgrade.
Probably. Do you need a decoder ring to read this book?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. Da Vinci Code, let me just summarize it. This guy named Dan Brown takes on 2,000 years of Jesus Christ ruling in the hearts and institutions of men, and Dan loses.
Okay. Now I don't have to get the book.
Ladies and gentlemen, 46 million copies. Can you believe it? More than my book, Upgrade. He's beat out Upgrade.
46 million.
46 million copies. And the movie comes out on May 19th. If you thought The Last Temptation of Christ was explosive, The Da Vinci Code is going to go thermonuclear. It's going to be controversial. It's offending a lot of Catholics and some Protestants. The Catholics are organizing 1,000 theater protests. There's Catholics all over. They're going to protest the theaters.
So they're going to go to the theaters and protest. Mm-hmm. That for sure will push up sales.
Yeah.
And if there's ever a way to make sure that a movie gets seen, go protest it.
And today we want to talk about the Da Vinci Code. And guess what? I mean, some people don't like Jesus, and they're trying to discredit him.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. It has happened before, hasn't it? I mean, didn't that why they put him on the cross?
Yeah, I think
they're discrediting him, weren't they?
I think so. I think they weren't pretty happy. I don't think they're very happy with what he was saying.
People have really stumbled on this thing called Jesus.
Well, he is a stone of offense, a stumbling rock to those who don't obey.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the world's been doing it for an awfully long time, so it's not really a shock to me. Dave, was it a shock to your system when Dan Brown came out with a book that sold 46 million copies and all kinds of people found out that Jesus married Mary Magdalene and they had a kid and everything else?
Really? Yeah. Jesus married Mary Magdalene?
This was
after the resurrection?
I don't know. I don't think the resurrection plays into the whole thing. He never really got crucified, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It's funny how 2,000 years of the best scholarship available for 2,000 years authenticates the biblical story, and yet one guy with some text is able to correct us all.
You bet. And ladies and gentlemen, old Dan Brown is trying to revive the old Gnostic gospel, which is around for, what, 400 or 500 years at the beginning, and still is around to some extent. Dan Brown is trying to revive the old Gnostic gospel. Basically goes like this: ye shall be as gods. Okay, that's the way Gnostic gospel goes. Ye shall be as gods. That shows up in history, doesn't it? That was it in the garden somewhere?
I think that's really old history.
Wasn't it a snake? It was a snake, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a snake. The snake said it. I remember it. The snake said it. Ye shall be as gods. Well, Dan Brown is bringing out this whole theology, the ye shall be as gods theology. Now, follow the logic here. If God is sovereign and Jesus Christ is King of Kings, and the Gnostic gospel died a wretched death, choking on its own vomit in the 4th century, then it's probably going to die again. And again, and again, and again. And I don't care if old Dan has 46 million converts. The truth always seems to win out. Now, you just wait a few months, and I'll bet you're going to pick up this book at the bargain bin down at Kmart or the outlet mall. The faith of the church will remain intact. G.K. Chesterton, remember him? I like G.K. Chesterton. Said a lot of really neat things back in the early 20th century. G.K. Chesterton said, orthodoxy is not only true, it is infinitely more interesting than heresy. It is alive and compelling and life-changing. Heresies come and go by fashion. The truth is unchanged and unchangeable. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about the Da Vinci Code. And talk about the old Gnostic Gospels. Because the Da Vinci Code is rooted in these old Gnostic Gospels. They've been around for thousands of years. Dan Brown is just recovering some of this old stuff that was discredited a long, long, long time ago. And we are going to talk about that next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson.
Worldview Radio at its best. This is Generations. This is Generations.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is Kevin Swanson today, The Da Vinci Code. It's going to be a movie on May 19th, and old Dan Brown's sold 46 million copies of this bad boy. That's a few more than I've sold. I'm working on it, though, Dave. Stop giving me such a hard time. I mean, what am I at? 5,000?
I don't know, but there could always be a second printing.
That's true. Folks, the Da Vinci Code, the book takes the old Gnostic line that Jesus Christ was married to Mary Magdalene. A child was born of this marriage, and Mary and her child fled after the crucifixion. So I guess Jesus was crucified. She fled to Gaul. Which is France, yeah. And they established the Merovingian line of European royalty, and that's the whole thing that Dan Brown takes up. And it's a big conspiratorial plot. Brown has to lay the groundwork by having his main characters deny the inspiration authority of the biblical text and replace Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John with the Gnostic Gospels, which is found in 1945, I think, at Nag Hammadi.
1945
at Nag Hammadi. Now, these Gnostic texts have been around for a long, long time. They're called the unaltered gospels, but we're going to look at those unaltered gospels in just a moment. You know, Mary Magdalene, she hits off for Gaul, and she takes the Holy Grail with her.
Wow, the gall of her to take that.
She took the Holy Grail with her. The main contours for the plot are actually found in the occultic literature, Holy Blood, Holy Grail by Michael Begin, Henry Lincoln, and Richard Lee. That came out in 1983, so this has been around for a long time. Other sources, the Templar, Revelation, the Gnostic. There's been a number of books come out in just the last couple of decades. People are really getting turned on by this stuff. A lot of it is because the feminists are liking this. They're finding that feminism is supported by the Gnostic Gospels, and we're going to refer to that in just a moment as well. One other point that I wanted to make about the book, The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, and that is, they bring up the Council of Nicaea. Now, the Council of Nicaea basically established the divinity of Christ, all right, that Christ is God. Now, the Da Vinci Code tells us that the emperor led the bishops to declare Jesus as the Son of God by a vote, and he said it was a relatively close vote at that, okay? Now, if you look in the records, you're going to find that the vote was 300-2.
Man, just barely squeaked by.
Yeah, just squeaked by.
298 vote switch, and it's all over.
It's all over, yeah. It was a close call. But, again, a little bit of a problem. You know, C.S. Lewis once argued that people might be willing to die for the truth, or even for a lie if they are innocently deceived, but very few people would die for what they know to be a lie. And somewhat persuasive, honey. Somewhat persuasive. The question here being, did the disciples lie about Jesus, and did they record all of these gospels, these ancient gospels, the oldest codex of which we have found is, what, 90 AD? We have found parts of the Gospel of John all the way back to 90 AD, which, as I recall, is just a little bit earlier than the dating of the Nag Hammadi documents, which were dated at 390. Okay, so what do we got here, Dave? Let's compare the ancient character of the text. We got 80-90 and 83-90. Looks to me like we're doing a little bit better with the original Gospels, right? So who's original here?
Well, it's sort of a silly argument. No real serious scholastic would doubt the authenticity of the canon because it has been examined up and down every which way since the beginning of the church, looking at apostolic authority, looking at church tradition, looking at the power of the text, looking at agreement with the rest of the text. This is just utter nonsense.
Oh, Dave, and there's another problem with the Da Vinci Code. They try to intimate that the Council of Nicaea established the canon. That's a joke. That's just an utter joke. You had a bunch of documents. I'm thinking of the Moratorian Canon, and that was what? That was about 200 or 180? Yeah, around the second century, right in the second century, you had all sorts of evidence that canon was being developed and was basically intact. Basically intact, folks, by the second century. So this idea that the Council of Nicaea established the canon, bogus. Utterly bogus. And it's been disproven again and again and again and again. And Dan Brown is just selling 46 million copies to people who seem to like to believe that the emperor is well-clothed here.
Well, I guess if you want to sell a conspiracy theory, why not sell the king of all conspiracy theories? But it really, in the end, it's just foolishness. It's just foolishness. Dumb. Pardon?
It's dumb.
Dumb?
Dumb. It's dumb. It's dumb. But, folks, I would want to look at the Gnostic Gospels. I've done some research. I've been looking at the Gnostic Gospels. Some very interesting stuff here. Again, the Nag Hammadi Library is a collection of 13 ancient codices containing over 50 texts discovered in Upper Egypt in 1945. They included such texts as the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Philip, and the Gospel of Truth. These were dated around 390 AD, again, well after the canon had already been established, well after the earliest manuscript we have of John, which dates back at around AD 90. So around 390, we've got a few texts that were floating around the world. And if you read them, Dave, what you find is, I gotta say, I think people were on drugs when they were writing these things. It's everything's disconnected. It's impossible to form any sort of unity. It's a little bit like the Quran, like an explosion in a Chinese fortune cookie factory. You know?
Without the cookies.
Without the cookies, yeah. All these weird things that are just put together having no real sense of connection whatsoever with each other. The Gospel of Thomas is probably the closest to the Gospels we know of as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Now, if you read the Gospel of Thomas, what you're going to find is about two-thirds of the Gospel of Thomas are quotations from other Gospels. Okay, just stuff you already know, the Beatitudes and, you know, different texts from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Just direct quotes, practically direct quotes. But then right in the middle of this stuff, you have some weird stuff that shows up about taking off your clothes in public and stomping on them. It's almost like somebody's writing, you know, the Beatitudes, you know, that Jesus gave on the Sermon on the Mount. They're given all the Sermon on the Mount stuff. And then suddenly some guy kind of takes a little bit of a toke from the doobie and says, oh, God, I know we do. Let's take off our clothes and then we'll stomp on them. Let's put that in the text. Oh, that sounds good. It's weird. Dave, why would anybody take anything like that seriously? Total disconnection. Total weirdness.
Kevin, the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, and some people will do anything, I mean absolutely anything, intellectually, to avoid the reality of the cross. And they will start dancing. Yeah, they'll start dancing naked on their clothes.
Ladies and gentlemen, today the Gnostic Gospel is the basis of the Da Vinci Code. And Gnosticism, let's define it. There's different ways to define it, and I'm going to just kind of go through some of the stuff I prepared on this. Gnosticism was looking for an expression of subtle visionary insights, inexpressible by rational proposition or dogmatic affirmation. No kidding. The idea was that if you produce something really weird, if you think about it long enough, it'll mean something to you. But the point here is the truth is not perspicuous, and therefore it can be interpreted and known individually by anybody. In other words, when you read something weird like that, the whole idea is, take off your clothes and stomp on them in public, and then you will be God or something. That is, again, twisting in people's mind to mean whatever they want it to mean. And this is, of course, one of the reasons why Dan Brown's book is so incredibly popular today. Dave, this is postmodernism. You can be your own source of truth. You can figure out. You can make whatever mean whatever you want it to mean. This is the whole concept of the reinterpretation of the Constitution in our country. Dave, we're reinterpreting everything to mean what we want it to mean, and that's the entire basis for the Gnostic Gospels.
Yeah, Gnosticism is the idea of a secret knowledge that individually we might come to some otherwise known knowledge that's a secret to us. It was passed on through tradition, or we might get it in a dream or some other means. It's the idea of having an allegorical translation or allegorical understanding of the Bible. It doesn't mean what it says that it means. There's some secret meaning in there. And if you can everyone have their own secret meaning, then there is no one meaning. And then, of course, there is no meaning whatsoever.
And there is no absolutes. And everybody wants that. The modern world hates the concept of absolutes. Of course they're going to run after Gnosticism. Here's another thing about Gnosticism. It inserts that, and by the way, Gnosticism spelled with a G-N, Dave, for those who have attended public schools.
Or members of the NEA, yes.
Yes. Gnosticism spelled with a G asserts that direct, personal, and absolute knowledge of the authentic truths of existence is accessible to human beings. Dave, this is the idea that absolute knowledge of the authentic truths is knowable. You can know absolutely and comprehensively. This meaning, of course, that we aren't relying on God who knows all things, and therefore we trust him who knows all things so that we can know what we need to know for life and faith, as opposed to God being the original and the absolute knower, man becomes his own God. Man becomes his own absolute knower. Gnosticism is also a knowing and by and of an uncreated self or self within the self. The knowledge leads to freedom. Knowledge leads to freedom. And this, of course, being humanism. Freedom from what? Freedom from God. Now, we say, in thy light we see light. That's the word of God. And that means we are dependent upon God. We are never free from God in our knowing. Listen to the Gospel of Thomas. This is one of those guys, you know, taking a little bit of toke and saying something kind of funny in the midst of the Gospel of Thomas. Jesus said, I am not your master. Boy, see, again, a contradiction. Elsewhere, Jesus was the master. He was, in fact, King of kings and Lord of lords. But in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus said, I am not your master because you have drunk. You have become drunk from the bubbling stream which I have measured out. He who will drink from my mouth will become as I am. I myself shall become he, and the things that are hidden will be revealed to him. Here it is, Dave. Here it is. I am not your master. I will become him. Man has always wanted to be God first, and that's what's happening here. That's what's happening here. Dave, this is, ye shall be as gods. This goes back a long, long ways. Ye shall be as gods. Comes back from the garden, and here it is again, right here. You shall be as gods.
That's a frightening prospect because man makes a really, really bad god.
Yeah.
It's a really harsh taskmaster, a very tyrannical god is what man makes.
Yeah, yeah. Man has always wanted to be God, and the Gnostic Gospels give him the opportunity to be just that. Ladies and gentlemen, the doctrine of God's Word teaches the incarnation, and that is that God becomes man. And that is the doctrine that stumbles, well, just about every humanist that ever lived. Because why? The agenda that man has had from the beginning, since the garden, was to become God. And that's what Dan Brown wants. That's what 46 million people want. They want to be as gods. And that's, Dave, it's so ironic. That's exactly what Satan tempted Eve with. Ye shall be as gods. There it was in the garden. Ye shall be as gods. And the snake shows up again in the Gnostic Gospels and shows up again in Dan Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code. Man doesn't want God to become man. He wants man to become God. But what is the great test of orthodoxy in 1 John?
An antichrist is one, according to John, who denies that Christ, God, became man.
Yeah, that God would become man, that Christ came in the flesh. Folks, that is the fundamental of our faith, that Jesus became man, that God became man and was Emmanuel, God with us. So in order for us to have relationship with God, we don't need to become God. We just simply have a relationship with the God-man, with Jesus Christ, who became man, Emmanuel, God with us, so that we could have a relationship with him. And this is the fundamental gospel of Jesus Christ. And it has been perverted badly by the Gnostic Gospels. And Dave, you know the Gnostic Gospels did make it to India and China. And China. Thomas made it to India and China. And the end result was heresy. And the church died out in India and China. You take a gospel this perverted and you send it to India and China, or anywhere in the world, you're going to find that that church is going to be utterly corrupted and eventually reduced to paganism again. And that's what happened in India and China. In fact, somebody said there were churches in just about every town in China by the 3rd or 4th century. But of course, folks, they died out. They died out because it was not the true gospel. It was not the true doctrine that had been codified at the Council of Nicaea and Chalcedon. It's critical to know your church history. Ladies and gentlemen, let me encourage you to know your church history. Know your church history. Teach your children church history so they know the great battles, the great doctrinal battles that have been fought in the history of the church. They need to know everything about Nicaea and Chalcedon.
And you know, Kevin, the strategies of the devil haven't changed in 6,000 years. The devil still comes out. He's very cunning. Remember, the serpent was more cunning than all the other beasts. He's still very cunning, and he attacks the same place he attacked Eve. Does God really say? Hath God really said? And so he attacks the very words of God in order to undermine the foundations of all reason, of all thought, of all ethics, of our metaphysics. And this is all this is. This is a cunning attempt of the devil to cast a doubt onto the word of God.
And let me say it again, ladies and gentlemen, the Church of Jesus Christ is not going to pass from the scene. You'll have your Gnostics, you'll have your Dan Browns, you'll have your Arians. that will bring out their counterfeit gospels, but they will die, and they will die, and they will die again. And they will die a wretched death, but the church of Jesus Christ will continue, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So let me encourage you to teach your children church history. There's a great resource called Trial and Triumph, one of our very favorite books. Dave, we have read this to our children in family worship time. And stories that are just exciting about how the Church of Jesus Christ has emerged victorious time and time again. Yes, it's gone through persecutions and martyrdom and trials and heresy, like the heresies of the Gnostics and the Arians and others, but it has always emerged victorious. And folks, you need to teach your children this view of history. And I encourage you to get the book Trial and Triumph. We handle it at our resource center in Parker, Colorado. You can get the book by calling 877-842-CHECK or just check it out at checkbooks.com on the web. That's checkbooks.com, checkbooks.com, and take a look at Trial and Triumph, a book on Christian history. You can interact with the program by emailing me, host@kevinswanson.com, and you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. Get your friends in Zimbabwe tuned in to us, folks, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.